Hello, this is Dr. Shiva. Welcome to our podcast, Get Educated or Be Enslaved.
Episode 1539, air date January 17th,
Name yourself, put a dash in the state that you're from, and then another dash if you're a new member, put NM next to it. We still have a lot of people that aren't following those directions, and it would make things move a lot smoother if you could please do that. Even returning people that have been here before, go ahead and do that real quick.
Okay, I'm just typing my name in for just sending a chat response and just where I'm from, I guess.
Nicholas and Matt, good evening. This is Dr. Shiva.
Hi, Dr. Shiva. You want to begin your lecture?
Yeah. So let's begin. I know you guys are in the midst of introductions, but perhaps I can finish and we can start. So today, the conversation we're going to have that I do as a part of our town halls, I take a topic and we go into it pretty deep to educate people on some of the core ways that we look at the world from a systems perspective. First of all, I want to welcome everyone. This is our town hall. We do them every Thursdays at 8 p.m. When we do it at 8 p.m., Suresh is helping me broadcast it also on the rest of social media platforms. But this is really primarily for our community of Truth, Freedom, Health warriors, our leaders, new attendees, and new members. So I want to welcome everyone. We have three different breakout rooms, and I think Matt is our host for this evening. Matt, we've had the main breakout, the main room, and then we've had the Warrior Scholars do their breakout, and then we've also had new members. Is that right?
That's correct. Yes, sir.
So the topic I want to talk about is a term that some of you may have heard of, and you typically associate that with Marxism called seize the means of production. And I want to talk about that, and I want to go deep into that in the context of the Postal Service. And then we're going to sort of peel away to take some questions. I did a tweet a couple of days ago, in fact, 2 days ago, where someone had put out there on Twitter that I think it was Tony Pierce. I don't know if Tony's here today, but Tony Pierce is one of our leaders in New Zealand, was having a educating someone. And this other individual was saying, there have been revolutions in the world. And he was saying punk rock was a revolution. Okay. And he was talking about all these counterculture revolutions. And Tony was, well, that's not the revolution I'm talking about. I'm talking about a bottoms up movement by working people. And then this guy retorted to him and he said, oh, workers' movements don't mean anything. It is technology that has always changed things, disruptive technologies. And so I jumped in there and I said, look, as a technologist, the reality is whenever technology has come, any kind of technology, if you look at the history of humankind, people initially think that technology is somehow going to make people freer, that it's going to give us more freedom, it's going to deliver more better economics to more people, right? This is called a big word. It's called devolution of power, D-E-V-O-L-U-T-I-O-N, devolution. Devolution means that you're going to devolve power to more people at the local level. So there has, there's a bunch of technophiles who will argue that, oh, technology delivers more freedom to people, for example, okay? And therefore, if we have more technology, you don't need people organizing and coming together to fight for their rights. Okay, that's one theory. Another theory says that you know, if we privatize everything and we decentralize everything, somehow miraculously, it'll just happen. And then the world is going to be great. We don't have to really fight for any of that. Another group of people, you call them reformists, R-E-F-O-R-M, reformists. Reformists say that we can legislate change, that if we just get the right people in governance, somehow things change, okay? And these three philosophies and their philosophies have always come as a way to avoid, you know, going and doing the necessary surgery that society needs from time to time. These are ideas which history shows actually don't really lead to anything except continued human suffering. So the technology idea, this guy in his post said, oh, see, technology got rid of newspapers. Technology got rid of, record labels, right? And their technology is going to get rid of banks. And therefore, you don't need to build a workers' movement. Now, why is this guy saying this? This is very similar to Bernie Sanders and the people on the quote unquote the left saying, don't worry, Bernie will fight for your change. You know, let Bernie go take care of fighting for workers' rights, that he's going to do it. You don't have to build a movement. Bernie Sanders is going to do it. And therefore, people just wait and wait and wait, thinking technology is going to change something. But let me just share with you a couple of things. There's a book I wrote in 1993 called Arts and the Internet. And this was at a time when many people thought that when the internet came, it was going to really free creative people so they could go direct and sell their stuff. And it was going to somehow create a much more freer world for more and more people. But when you really think about what actually happened, and you can go look at the printing press, or you can go look at the internet. So it initially starts with this hope that technology is going to free us. And you get a certain amount of feedback given to making you think it's going to do that. But when you actually see what happens, you'll find out that if you look at the world of actual distribution of records and films, it's all actually become even more consolidated. Amazon, for example, and the big studios may have fallen, but Amazon actually and Netflix actually control more movie making than ever before. They vertically consolidated from funding the movies to having the studios and having distribution. Before, studios would make the movies, or record labels would make it, and then they would have to go to someone else for distribution. Now it's all vertically consolidated. Okay, so that's quite interesting. You then look at publishing. It's a few major publishers own everything. We were supposed to build our own internet websites. In 1993, people were building their own internet websites. They were local internet providers. Some of you may remember, right? Small internet providers, and everyone would build their own little website, learn how to do HTML programming. And then you had three behemoths show up: YouTube, you know, Google, Facebook, and you know, Twitter to some extent. These three behemoths, people started building. They wouldn't even build websites anymore. They would just build their little Facebook presences. Facebook made it, you know, point click to do this. So, but the reality was you outsourced your freedom of having your own website on your own server and your own data center into the cloud, into a particular property. And those properties could throw you off. Some of you who posted on Facebook get thrown off, right? If you had your own websites done the old-fashioned way, you wouldn't have that issue. But most people got lazy and didn't want to do that. So essentially what happened is these major platforms, it's like almost like you go into a big condominium, part of a massive apartment building, right? Or a big complex. So you have consolidation. So when technology has come, it's actually made it more and more easier to consolidate power as never before. So the notion that technology is going to free us and give us even more liberation is actually not true. And this is a very, very interesting, larger question that people need to discuss. How much technology and who is actually owning this technology and who is controlling these technologies? Now, many of these technologies were built at the behest of public dollars. And we tend to forget that. Tax dollars, people's, many of these companies got subsidies, etc. So there's a lot of tremendous infrastructure that has been built through your money, my money, and working people's money. And somehow, a lot of that public infrastructure tends to get more and more privatized. And then you outsource a lot of the rights to those private companies. And I've talked about this before, but I want to go into it in a little deeper way. So there has always been, long before Karl Marx existed, so people always tend to, whenever you have this conversation, they put up a picture of Karl Marx. So we need to have a conversation about this. Is that the means of production, after a certain point, we have to look at it from a global way on how supply chain works and what is some of these core means of production. So when you look at technology again, you recognize that the advent of technology and the proliferation of technology, while initially it starts out good, initially it creates monopolies. A few people start owning most of these technologies, a few companies, in fact, and they all trade among each other. So there's a good book written by Robert McChesney, who's a professor, I think at the University of Chicago, one of those, or University of Illinois. And he wrote a book and looking at the major media companies. It turns out there are four major media companies, Disney, Viacom, News Corp, and I forget the other one. But all of them actually control most of the information flow. And each one of those companies, public companies, actually owns equity in the other companies, very much like the oil cartels. Okay? So they are actually indeed a club. And over the last 50 to 70 years, consolidation has taken place in every field. I talked about it this morning. I'll give you another field in technology. Many of you, if you live in where we live, where it's cold, you have a furnace. I know, Glenn, you're in Canada. You probably have a furnace there. People live in the Northeast. You have furnaces. People may not know this. There are three companies in the world which produce all these furnaces, all the parts in those furnaces. If you went to some type of engineering school, if you notice, you know, my furnace has been running for almost 35 years. It just went out, okay? Has a little crack in it. We're going to get a new one. So the guy that came to fix the furnace, he said something interesting. He goes, you know, the next furnace you get will maybe last you 10 years or 12 years. And I said, why is that? And he said, well, you know, it's called planned obsolescence. Planned obsolescence. What does that mean? That means if you take a furnace has so many cycles of running, let's say during a winter season. Starts and stops, goes up certain cycles. If you take a fluid mechanics course in a graduate level course or a thermodynamics course, 50 years ago, when you built a furnace, you couldn't exactly predict how long that furnace would go. Why? Because you didn't have the computing power to mathematically model it. So you said, well, you know, we got to make the furnace last around 30 years. Okay, 40 years, whatever it was. But over the last 20 years with computing power, you know, when I graduated in 2000 and when one of my mechanical engineering degrees, there's a course called computational fluid mechanics. One of the things we would do is we would model a furnace and we could model all the heat transfer equations with absolute perfection using numerical computation. And we could predict failure rates. That's what they're doing with furnaces now. Because of the advances in computing, when I'm building a furnace, I know all the parts that are there. I can model it. I know exactly how, when that machine will break. I can design the thickness of certain things, right? The quality of certain things. And I can say, shoot, as a company, we don't want this thing to last forever, because companies make money by quarter over quarter revenue. They need predictable revenue. They need to know, okay, we have 10,000 furnaces out there. We know this quarter, 4,000 are going to fail. We're going to make so much revenue. So it's called predictable planned obsolescence. But because of technology and computing power, they can predict this. Quite interesting, right? It's not like the old days where you just created really good things, right? And it may have been the chicken or the egg, which came first? Were they doing it because they wanted to create great things? Or now with computing power, you could predict, and now you could predict obsolescence. But anyway, the guy that was in here said, you know, three companies control all of it. So, and by the way, most of the parts exchange between these companies. So they have a way of predicting their business model and how long the furnaces are going to go and how to basically control supply, right? Because once you can control obsolescence, you can control supply and you can keep price going and you make sure that those economies are running. So who is deciding planned obsolescence? So everyday people who buy a house and they spend so much money or they have a furnace, think about that they have to now budget every 10 years that they're going to have to get a new furnace or a new water heater. And he goes, water heaters, man, they're going to fail within to the day when you get your warranty statements. So private, large, publicly traded corporations, because of modern technology, can control your lives as never before. Planned obsolescence is another example of this. Again, massive consolidation of power. And these decisions about technology, planned obsolescence, who owns it, is not being decided by we the people. It's being decided by an incredible motive for profit. Now, you could argue, well, that's created a lot of these amazing things. And it's true. But the nature of large-scale crony or monopoly capitalism ultimately leads to really fucked up inventions. Okay? So you start using computing power not to really create great furnaces. You use computing power to decide when things are going to go obsolete. You see what I'm saying? It's not like you're doing stuff for the advancement of humankind. You're doing stuff for the advancement of knowing that we need this much to break. So the bean counters who run these companies tell the engineers what to do. It's not engineers say, hey, look, I can create an amazing furnace that can last 100 years. The bean counters say, no, we don't want that. We want you to create things that actually break down. Okay? So it's an example of what's happening. So computing power, you would think, wow, we can do all this computing. Isn't that going to make a better world? It's going to make things cheaper and better. Not true. I want to give you that contradiction. It's who controls the technology and what's the motivation of that technology, right? Now, if we, the people, own these technologies, you know, and we were participating in these kinds of decisions, I think we'd say, wow, it'd be really cool to have furnaces that last for, you know, a long time, right? Let's focus on other things over here, right? But so that it's very important to understand this. If you look at certain technologies, you'll notice some of your iPhones, you notice that they start getting slower at a certain rev cycle. You have to wonder why, right? So the manufacturers are control through technology. You can control a lot more than you thought ever before. Okay. So it's very, very important background to understand. There are large scale technology infrastructures which are currently being built and that have been built at the behest of your money and your father's money and your grandfather's monies collectively. So I'm going to do, we're going to be doing a larger discussion on this with a couple of postal service workers, I think over this Monday or weekend. But I want to talk about the postal service in the context of this as a technology infrastructure. I've spoken about it, but I want to go into detail talking about, in this context of seizing the means of production, why the founders of the United States were very, very clear that the Postal Service was really an engine. It was an amazing operational infrastructure. It was a technology infrastructure. It's a system. They call it the U.S. Postal Service or U.S. Postal System. It's actually a system. It's a very complex system. And if the Postal Service was privatized, the cost of a mail you wouldn't be able to afford. They wouldn't run 6 days a week. They would maybe run it 4 days a week. Okay? Trump wants to privatize the Postal Service. Elon Musk wants to privatize the Postal Service. It's been talked about. So let's talk about that. Long before, again, Karl Marx, for centuries and thousands of years, human beings had the concept of commons. Certain things were we the people's property, like air, right? Like the trees, certain things, certain large-scale infrastructure. The Postal Service was created as a technology infrastructure in the vein that certain things are like air we breathe. The founders in 1787 really felt movement of information and communication should be like air, breathing. Does that make sense? It's a very powerful concept. Certain things cannot be owned by, you know, by individuals for maximization of profit. So if you look, some of you may not know it, there are places that they have figured out how to deliver mail by actually using little rockets. So if there's a river, some of the postal departments will actually put mail and they'll shoot it over. It's quite incredible. Certain remote areas, they've figured out all different ways how to take a piece of mail and get it from point A to point B. And it was done for pennies, 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 pennies. All this infrastructure was built. Right down the street, there's a little postal center. Probably in every one of your neighborhoods, there's a postal center. And these postal centers do sorting. They make sure the mail is delivered. They get it delivered on time. They have human beings. It used to be about 500,000 workers in the United States. And this is part of a public infrastructure that was designed so we could have free and open communications. But the Postal Service was created for open communications, not just for delivering physical mail. At the time it was founded in 1787, what they knew about communications was letter writing, but it was really designed for communications at the heart of it. All right, so again, I've shared this before, but I wanna put this in the larger context of the means of production. So the Postal Service is an infrastructure above which so many other things run. It is a means of producing goods, traversing goods, making sure things happen. It was never meant to be owned by individuals for maximization of profit. So the Postal Service has run extraordinarily well for many, many, many years. It's been the vehicle for political communication, uncensored political communication. When email was created, email volume overtook postal mail volume in 1997. I was very concerned about this. I told the Postal Service, I met with them. I said, you should expand your mission for open, free communications and add email. And in fact, add social media. They thought this was crazy. But in my view, in the spirit of the founders, that's a public infrastructure which should support also public email service. And they could charge maybe $5 a year. And you could use a USPS postal service email system. And even USPS could support servers. And what's even more interesting is if you look at all these postal service locations, there's a technology that was coming out at the time called WiMAX, where you put a little antenna and it lets you, so you have enough antenna spread out, you can create your own what's called a mesh network, which is precisely what Elon Musk has put into every one of his satellites. So you basically have all these satellites in low Earth orbits and they all communicate among each other. They're a mesh network, which is what I proposed back in 1997 for Postal Service to do, but it would be our network, not owned by private companies. Yes, if you want to use Verizon, AT&T, great. But we, the people, would have our own mesh network. We would have our own ability to communicate through email and social media, servers brought to you by the people, for the people. And guess what? If any of those communications were opened or touched by anyone in the government, you could sue the government for censor, for violation of your First Amendment rights. So just think about what I'm saying. This is why certain things must be owned by the people within the laws of we the people, because then we have rights. Very, very important to understand, because when I say the Postal Service, people are like, what are you talking about? And then people say, holy shit, what he's saying is actually pretty right on. It makes so much sense. But initially people say, oh, the Postal Service is a government, and the government will be spying on you. No, idiot. Because if the government provides this infrastructure and it's owned by us, we the people, if the government violates your rights, you actually have recourse. Very important to understand this fundamental concept. Public infrastructure, our infrastructure, communal infrastructure, bottoms up. Very different than government and big tech coming together in a collusion where they give a artificial concept of, oh, government's here, Twitter's here, Google Mail is here, Gmail is here, and et cetera is here. And private companies now have overtaken the Postal Service. They've overtaken communication. But the reality is, we now know from my lawsuit in 2020 that government can tell these companies to silence you, throw you, in fact, read your email if they want to. They can do that. The private company does it. Private company has First Amendment rights. You don't have any rights. Versus if the government had opened your email, like the Postal Service, you could sue them and you would win in any court in the land. Okay, so in many ways, the Postal Service was a vehicle for we the people owning our means of production. Very fundamental rights, directly linked to the Bill of Rights, in this case, the First Amendment. So what we've seen happen step by step by step is, as technology has come, and initially, you know, a bunch of entrepreneurs get together, cool, they build something. They have 20 years of patent rights. Okay, great. They make money. But over time, the proliferation of what began as a market capitalism has now consolidated to monopoly capitalism. And it is a nature of how things have evolved. And then eventually imperialism. So you have three major furnace vendors. You have three major telecommunications companies. You have three major social media companies. Probably one major, you know, Earth orbiting satellite company who's going to own all the communications. One major platform which controls all of political communications on social media. That's really Twitter. If you want to be a politician and you're not Twitter, you're fucked. One major medium which controls, you know, sharing family stuff, which is really Facebook. So the level of consolidation of power technology has done has gone inexorably in a direction that is not going to free us. It's no longer disruptive. Palantir can watch everything you do and know exactly the directionality of how communications are going. I was speaking to I did a podcast yesterday with a guy called Matt Kim, who he said, you know, I learned how to do viral videos. Trump called me, you know, every influencer is willing to pay me companies, thousands of dollars, political companies, for me to promote their stuff. And he said, when I discovered this, he goes, I left the Trump train. And he said, I found out 99% of the social media influencers are all sponsored. Every single one of them. Every single one of them. Candace Owens is complete bullshitter. She's purposely conflating Zionism with anti-Semitism. That's what she's paid to do. But everyone's views who grows like this, they are all paid, guys. Consolidation of power. So now with technologies like Palantir, which can watch conversations, and with AI, they can say, okay, Dr. Shiva just said this. We don't want him to get all the credit and be an independent agent of change. They call up Candace Owens. Okay, why don't you conflate anti-Semitism with anti-Zionism? And they'll promote them. Technology is making it very powerful, not to be disruptive technology, or disruption for freedom, but actually for control. So when you look at something like the Postal Service, which was allowing us to have these amazing rights, it's being consolidated and it's going to be outsourced. I don't know if you guys know, Postal Service workers cannot strike. Did you guys know this? So think about this. If a Postal Service worker says, you know what? My organization is protecting the First Amendment, and I believe our organization is being attacked by private companies, and I want to organize Postal Service workers to strike, they can't do that. And this has been argued as, and I've started to do some research on this. It's quite fascinating. Here's an organization for First Amendment rights, which doesn't even have its own First Amendment right to strike, which is the most important organization for distribution of communications infrastructure. And I believe this was done by Reagan, or right before Reagan, maybe even under Carter, okay? Carter was one of the biggest neoliberal conservatives, you know, who played both sides. He was a fascist, actually. Most of the real fascism took place under Jimmy Carter's rule, but then they try to reframe him as some humanitarian. It's not true. But so we are witnessing right now consolidation of technology as never before, and outsourcing of infrastructure that you, I, and everyone created to private companies. The entire AI infrastructure, by the way, AI is basically taking human knowledge of many, many years, your knowledge in many, many industries, and putting it into private companies. The algorithms are, you know, from a guy who used to build these algorithms, they've been around since 1970 and 80s. There's really nothing. Everyone's, ooh, AI, AI. All that's happened is they can put them on faster chips now. And they can consolidate it as better than ever. But the reality is all that human knowledge is our knowledge. I'll give you an example. In 1984, there's a very interesting field called Tadoma, how deafblind people communicate. How do deafblind people communicate? I don't know if you read the story of Helen Keller, but there's a technique called Tadoma, T-A-D-O-M-A. You can look it up. So Tadoma is where you take your hand and you place it on someone's face. Two fingers, one finger goes on the lower lip, the other finger goes on the upper lip, one finger goes, you know, on the cheeks, and you can literally hear people's vibrations and you can discern. And that's how deafblind people can hear what people are saying with their fingers. So 1983, public funding came to MIT to figure out how this was being done. I was an undergraduate, and people would come in and we would put this retainer in their mouth and we would measure seven signals, their upper lip movement, lower lip movement, the position of their tongue, vibrations, and we would record words, phonemes, and we would save them. Eventually, we built a machine that you could put your finger in and you could actually learn how to listen to people. It's quite fascinating. Well, all of that human knowledge was funded by public dollars. It eventually went into AI systems. And God knows what's happened with that. My point is, human knowledge, human assets, your knowledge, your grandparents' knowledge, society's knowledge is going in a very fundamental way. The intellectual property of everyone on this call and millions of other people is being sucked, put on these chips, and going to be owned and then eventually be outsourced. I would argue that's public knowledge, wouldn't you? Isn't that our information? Who is deciding that should be owned by a few companies? Who is making these decisions? So it's not that any of these technologies are bad. It is who is making these decisions to consolidate these technologies and take publicly funded knowledge and give them to other people's infrastructure that then they can charge us back. If you look at telecommunications, if you actually look at what you pay for cable today or TV today, I don't know how many people remember we had the UHF, right, VHF antennas. You still got entertainment. It was pennies. So now you go on Prime, you're paying what, 50 bucks, 200 bucks for cable, and you have to pay for ads. Have you noticed this? Prime is now charging you advertising on top of paying your monthly fees. Because they can, they've consolidated that much because they're completely vertically integrated, all of this knowledge. With AI coming in, they're taking actors' looks and their feels and their past stuff, and they're owning even all of that. So you need less and less actors. So But all of that knowledge is not being given any value. So you have transfer of knowledge from human beings to machines, public knowledge, and no one's paying for any of that. And we're going to pay for it on the back end. So I would argue we're heading into a very rapid point in human history where the means of production of these technologies, a significant number of them should be we the peoples, and we need to have that discourse. Who owns these technologies? And as a movement, we want to have that discourse, and that's what I want this to be the beginning of. We're going to do a number of more videos on the Postal Service and why I talked about this back in 2010. But now, because we have our movement and we have a number of Postal Service workers in our movement, we're going to have a broader discussion on who the fuck is Elon Musk to say that the Postal Service should be outsourced. By the way, do you know Amazon only pays the Postal Service like less than a dollar for the parcels that they move? And the value that Amazon makes is quite incredible. So, you know, when they give you free shipping, it's not free shipping. We're paying for it. Okay. Jeff Bezos gets that lift. And Jeff Bezos will tell you, there's a bunch of articles I can share with you. Oh, Amazon would never have made it this far were it not for the Postal Service. All right. So what's happened is politicians who get funded by these private companies have literally taken huge pieces of public infrastructure and given it back to their donors at pennies on the dollar. It's called theft. And that's what's going on. So these public infrastructures, which all of us working people actually contributed to, AI, telecommunications, I think we need to have a broader discussion. Who owns this? Is it fair that with these consolidation of technologies, that are we not basically shooting ourselves in the head by letting this take place? And that is a discussion that needs to be happen very, very quickly. And we need to take some firm stances on this. Postal Service workers should have the right to strike. They should. If, particularly on behalf of the working people of the United States or the world, that, hey, look, the Postal Service really should not be outsourced, should not be privatized. It's like core infrastructure. It's like air we breathe. And there's many other infrastructures like that. But for all of us, the broad mass of people, what does this mean? It means the cost of goods and services should be much, much less, guys. If you see the healthcare video I do, you'll find that I did in the Get Off the Plantation series, you'll find out that the cost of healthcare comes down to something so simple. The costs are too high. They're just overinflated. Go to a primary care doctor. Go to a physical therapist. Go try to, you know, I just went to, I had a minor leg injury and I was going to a PT. And he was saying, you know, I hate taking fucking insurance. It's too hard for me. So he goes, I'd rather get paid out of pocket. And when you go through the dissection I did on GPOs and PBMs, you'll find out that it has to do with costs. So what's happening is ultimately when privatization takes place, things that are pennies on the dollar are inflated by a factor of 1,000. There's a drug called Bosentan, which sells for 12 cents. Under insurance, you have to pay $200 for it. Okay? So the privatization of a tremendous amount of public infrastructure on the one hand, and the reality is as machines come, costs should actually be coming down, but they continue to increase. Okay? And so we're essentially paying double time on this. So I want to encourage people to really think about this. And whenever, you know, I put this slogan out, you know, seize the means of production, people say, oh my God, you sound like Karl Marx. Well, Marx doesn't own that. And just get out of your head. Just because, you know, Marianne says that there's gravity and Peter says there's gravity and Christina Kirk says gravity exists and Hitler says there's gravity exists, you can't say, oh, Hitler said gravity exists, therefore it doesn't exist. Okay? There are certain things that are just true. Whether Karl Marx or whether I say that we should seize the means of production, there's certain things that are public infrastructure. Ooh, Marx said it. Therefore, what? Dot, dot, dot. It's not true. No. So over the last, particularly starting the 1950s, whenever you had the discussion of communal ownership, which means we the people should own things, it was immediately branded as Karl Marx. Well, and the elites used that to not have this discussion I'm talking about. Meanwhile, what they did is the Marxism that they talked about was government and big companies owning infrastructure. That is what China is, and it's called state capitalism. That is what the United States is moving towards. Elon Trump Inc., which is a meme that I've created, captures that. Elon Trump Inc., government and Silicon Valley coming together. I mean, think about fucking Elon. The guy's never invented anything. All of his companies come from your tax dollars, and he's going between government here, and he's making billions of dollars off public infrastructure. SpaceX is all public infrastructure. It's ex-NASA engineers and military, which you funded. He's not doing any of that shit. It's our money. Same with Twitter. Same with Tesla is funded by public tax, carbon tax subsidies. Okay, so you have an individual who represents what I'm talking about, and it's no different than China. The government and corporations have come together as one, and it's huge. It's like it's not even kings anymore. It's like a few monarchs: Jeff Bezos, Elon Trump, Zuckerberg, and a few. It's the level of consolidation of power is occurring right before your very eyes. Elon Trump Inc. And we need to get this very clear. What does this mean for innovation? Who gets to innovate? What does this mean for the advancement of society? And I would argue it's going to become less and less and less and less people making decisions on what kinds of technologies are going to be created and who it benefits. It's a very dangerous time right now. It really, really is. And so we must put forward something bold, not pussyfoot around like the Democrats. Oh, we're going to regulate this. That's what Elizabeth Warren said. We're going to regulate the banks. We're going to regulate this, regulate this. Well, whenever they do regulation, all that means is consolidate greater power. We're not talking about regulation. We're talking about bottoms up movements where we must say, no, you know what? That shit is ours, meaning we the people. It's public commons. Very, very different approach than top down models. And we will talk more about this, but I want us to start thinking about this very clearly, to start thinking about new paradigms. Now, this is very different in closing to the idiots who say, well, we got to create parallel systems to fight the matrix. I'm going to go off grid. I'm going to do my stuff over here. Well, going off grid is basically running away. It's like saying, okay, I'm going to do my own thing over here. Well, the reality is all the shit that we have here, it's our stuff. We shouldn't run away. We should take it back. It's a very different model of thinking. I'm going to do my own safe house here. I'm going to go up into the woods. I'm going to create my own, whatever, my own infrastructure. Great, you can do that, but not everyone can do that. But more importantly, all of us working people here contributed to this infrastructure. And that infrastructure is now being used against us for surveillance and censorship and greater consolidation. So we really need to get our act very, very clear on this. There is infrastructure, which is our infrastructure, like the Postal Service, and we must take back the Postal Service. We must demand the Postal Service have other features for all types of communication. So Facebook and Twitter and YouTube, all those services should be under the aegis of the Postal Service, public infrastructure. It may sound like a crazy idea, but when you really work this through, you'll realize why I'm saying that. Because if Marianne puts a video up on this public infrastructure, Marianne, no one can take it off. It's protected by the First Amendment, period. But if YouTube puts it off and the government tells YouTube to take it down, YouTube will take down your video and you have no recourse. You send a mail through the Postal Service, no one can open it. If they do, it's 22 years in prison. We don't forget all the encryption, forget stupid blockchain. It's all nonsense. Quantum computing comes, you can break any blockchain. This is all like retards talking retarded shit, okay? Blockchain, I just studied it. You know, you don't know. It's just a stupid linked list. It's not any great technology. It's fundamentally policies. This is why I use the Postal Service as an example. I send a letter to Marianne. Postal Service worker opens it. You're in fucking prison for 22 years. That's technology, okay? That's much better than any encryption can ever do. I should be able to send an email to Marianne knowing that Gmail is not going to open my email. I should be able to post something on social media knowing that no one can take that down. No one. Postal Service can guarantee that. It can, because it is part of the First Amendment. Very important to understand this. We need public infrastructure that's owned by the people. I would argue radio, telecom, all of this stuff should be public, not nationalized. That's what the fake Marxists or the fake Bernie Sanders do. They confuse state-owned stuff from people-owned stuff. How we enact that, we're going to have a conversation about that. So anyway, I wanted to have this conversation, let you guys know that we have to really start thinking about some of the public commons, who owns these commons, and just start reflecting on what I'm sharing with you here. It's deep, but the founders in 1787 had already thought about it, these magnificent, very, very smart people. They thought about this stuff. If they were here today, they would be appalled at what the postal. They would be appalled at how much of public infrastructure is owned in private hands. They would say we were way worse than, you know, pre-1776. I mean, the king used to open up every mail. Did you guys know this? The crown's mail was opened up. Everything was surveilled. How the fuck are we any different right now? A bunch of oligarchs, and you have Mark Zuckerberg telling you, oh yeah, I had to censor you. Poor me, I was brutalized on this fucking Joe Rogan, whatever this, and we're supposed to feel sorry for him? So nowadays, in the old days, the analogy I give, and I'll end with this, is that a alcoholic, let's say, would come home and beat his wife, and he'd say, oh, I'm so sorry, honey, it won't happen again. Now the alcoholic comes home and beats his wife, and he say, you know what, I'll beat you again, and you're just going to have to deal with it. That's what's happening with censorship. Yeah, we censored you, and we will continue to censor you. And by the way, I'm the victim because I have to censor you. That's what Zuckerberg just did. So poor old me. More censorship has taken place under Elon Musk, 50% more than under Jack Dorsey. It's happening right in front of your face. What are you going to do about it? The elites are telling you, we are fucking you, and we will continue to fuck you, and you will have to deal with it. They're not even apologizing anymore. We must seize these means of production, the public commons, which were created by us. And we must have that attitude. We can't run away from this. We have to start really thinking in a very different way. And this is why working people like the Postal Service should be striking. They should say, you know what, we're going to go on strike on behalf of the working people of the United States because you are seizing public property. You know, but the unions in the entire United States have been taken over by these charlatans who don't really fight for anything except doing short-term gains, raising certain people's salary, and getting rid of lots of jobs. That's what the unions really do. They're fake unions. So we're living in a very important time, and our movement is the only force that has this kind of conversation to have this discourse. Anyone out there who's promoting that technology is going to solve everything is a grifter and is selling bullshit opium. Anyone who's not talking about the fact that we must take these means of production, this is a reality. I'm sorry, this is where you really got it. This is where the rubber meets the road. Where do you really stand on this? So it's very, very important to have this discussion. And I think this is the right time, and our movement's their position to do that. So all of you who are here, welcome. I want to encourage you to participate in this conversation I know, Nicholas, you were in the middle of introducing people. Do you guys want to finish that up? Or Matt?
Yeah, we can try to finish up. I was just scoping the room.
Yes, if anyone's new, please, as a part of the ethos here, you know, raise your hand. You know, we're a community here. Don't hide in the woodworks just listening, because it's really being a parasite. We like people to contribute in the sense, introduce yourself. No one's going to bite you. Say where you're from and say hello, because, and when you introduce yourself, use the reactions button, because it's really enormously valuable for us to know where people are from, how you came to find us, and how you want to contribute. We are a bottoms up movement, all working people. We want people to get off their butts, understand the dynamics of power. There's a science to this. There is a curriculum to this. You cannot learn this anywhere else but here. We're the only place you can understand this dynamics of power. And we've made it into an actual scientific, engineering, educational curriculum. So you can't get this. So if you made it this far, learn that. Start with watching Shatter the Swarm. Come to the orientations. Join one of the local communities. They meet weekly, and then monthly they meet face-to-face. If you're hanging out on the outskirts, you, after coming here, you have no excuse to say what to do. I don't know what to do. Well, there's a lot of stuff to do. We have our movement. We have leadership training. We have different solutions. We have an entire solution for ensuring we have clean food. We have a whole solution for health education. We have an entire solution for building new medicines, bottoms up. And we're doing that. We're going after 37 major diseases in the world by ourselves, using our own infrastructure. And those of you who say, I don't have time, bullshit. You have a lot of fucking time. Take 20 minutes out of your day as a working person to allocate time to go hand out cards, to participate. That's how things are going to change. If you recently became part of the United States system or whatever citizen, wherever you are, understand that you have to participate. And it's going to be one-on-one educating people. There is no shortcut. We have to do this one-on-one. And everyone who raises their consciousness, they become an amazing beacon of knowledge to many other people. So we've created that infrastructure to get involved. If you want to introduce yourself, please be mindful. We have some disciplines we follow. Take 1 minute. Please say who you are, where you're from, how you can contribute to us. So we have Doug Sutton. Has he spoken before, Matt?
No, not yet.
Okay, go ahead, Doug. Douglas Sutton, can you introduce yourself? And then we'll take Q&A.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, you have some feedback going on.
Okay, hold it. I'll keep it short. All right, I'm in Pennsylvania, and I have been in contact with Gerald Smith.
Can you turn your volume down on, I don't know if you have two devices open?
I do.
Okay, maybe turn down the volume on one or move them from
you.
I'm going to turn off one. I do apologize.
Go ahead, Doug.
Okay, I'm trying to eliminate one of them.
All right, Gerald, are you? Gerald, can you connect with Doug after this? Gerald?
Yeah, I can do that.
Okay, great. Yeah, I think it's just having some sound problems, if you can do that. All right, Matt, is there anyone else that you see?
Looks like Elizabeth Curtis raising her hand or waving at us.
Who's that? Oh, Elizabeth Curtis. Hi, Elizabeth, go ahead. Elizabeth, go ahead.
Okay. Hi, I'm Elizabeth. I'm from Oregon and Willamette Valley. And I heard about you from Brighteon, and I don't want to be a parasite. I don't know if you know about Quart. Do you know the Quart? It's a new blockchain that's going to be, I I'm learning about it, but it's Qmail, Qshare, Qvideo, Qradio, but it's all blockchain. It's private. They've been really working on making it not so people can't intervene in the product. So, and it's basically free, but it'd be a good thing to just check on Court, although it's...
Elizabeth, are you new?
Yeah.
Okay. Just continue.
Yeah, I've been to all the meetings, but I haven't showed my face, and I'm now become a warrior and excited about what you're doing, Dr. Shiva.
Yeah, Elizabeth, thank you. Connect with Crystal and Nicholas, because Nicholas is helping us run the Oregon meetings, the weekly meetings. I think he just
yesterday.
So here's the deal, Elizabeth. If you look at blockchain, right, you're probably familiar with quantum computing is coming, right?
Mm-hmm.
So blockchain is basically what they call a linked list. You learn it in like, you know, you learn it in the fifth grade or eighth grade computing now. And then you have hashes, which help you link from one to another. But when quantum computing appears, you're going to break all this. Okay. So one technology comes, another one comes, and another one comes, and another one comes, another one comes.
Gotcha.
But this gets back to this fundamental thing that none of these technologies ever solve the fundamentals until we agree who owns and operates these technologies for whose benefit.
Good point.
This is a fundamental question. Look at, you have BlackRock is now into Bitcoin, right? So
they can go into all of the Bitcoin now. Is that what you're saying?
Quantum computing is computing with speeds that you've never known before. So all of the blockchains are based on you may remember in math class, you learned something called prime factorization. So if I took the number, let's say 22, 22 is one, the prime factors are one, right? Let's say 2 and 11, okay? You see what I'm saying? They're called prime factors.
Yeah.
When you have very large numbers, you have to find the prime factors of these numbers, okay?
Right.
Well, when the computing becomes so rapid, which is what quantum computing is going to do, you break a barrier that you don't have to, you know, the blockchain and all this prime factorization, you overcome that. So a lot of people have no idea. The techno geeks are a bunch of idiot nerds. I'm sorry. I'm talking to someone who went to the biggest nerd school and has 4 degrees from it. Most nerds are not that bright. They're just like reductionist people. They don't see the big picture ever, okay? So I don't get that enthralled by technology. What intrigues me more is who controls this technology?
Good point.
And whose benefit is it for? And that's the question we're asking, you see?
Yeah. Who?
So none of these technologies are going to free us.
Yeah.
Freedom is going to come from working people organizing to free us, not technology. Okay? It's putting the cart way before the horse. So that's what this conversation is really about today. Okay? I don't care what technology you have. Don't try to sell me that this is going to do this and that and that. It's not true. If it were the case, if Bitcoin was so great, why would all the biggest scumbags in the world be owning Bitcoin now? Can you answer that? No, you can't. Yeah. I'm sorry, I can't hear you. You muted yourself.
I've heard that the big guys do own Bitcoin, and that's ruined the whole system now. So, but anyhow, that's fascinating that it's we the people and the infrastructure that we own. That's really excellent. Thank you.
That's where I'm saying we should start with who owns all of these technologies. Who is deciding the policy on AI and robots? Who's deciding all of this?
Really?
Yeah, who's deciding it?
Good point. Thank you.
Yeah. Let's go to Amanda in New Jersey. Go ahead, Amanda. We have Rose Cius here and Paul Testa. Amanda, how are you? Good to have you.
Sure thing. Good evening, everybody. I just wanted to introduce myself quickly. I am a new member, Amanda from New Jersey. I've been sort of part of alternative knowledge and media streams and health for a while, but I was really drawn to how you are kind of syncing together all of the philosophies and the systems approach and contributing towards something that's like more sustainable for humanity, bottoms up approach, and sort of like a circular economy or things that are for the people and, you know, trying to elevate people's knowledge. And quite recently, I've come across a lot of people that, you know, you try to introduce information or things that are contrary to the sort of state-sponsored opinion, and there's just a lot of pushback. So I'm seeking means in which to educate myself and all, along with my delivery of like information to get through to people, to lift veins of knowledge and also cause transformation in my own community and everywhere else. So yeah, thank you so much for what you've done. It's like amazing stuff. I'm still going through all the tutorials and stuff like that, but also awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, so Amanda, what part of New Jersey are you in? Because I have told Testa here.
Yeah, I'm actually in South Jersey. So Yeah, it's kind of like, well, not south, but it's kind of like 30 minutes away from Philadelphia region.
Okay, so, are you in touch with Eileen or Rose Cius?
Yeah, I spoke to Rose about like a week and a half ago, so I haven't attended any local meetings yet with them, but I hope to very soon.
And what do you do in New Jersey?
Oh, yeah, so I'm a designer slash developer for emerging technologies, so augmented reality, virtuality, also other things of that nature, too, so.
Yeah. All right, well, very nice to have you.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I think, Amanda, to your observations, what we have built here, this movement is founded on engineering principles, reality. It's not founded on some philosophical ideas, right? That you can't, that it's just an idea in someone's brain, right? It's not founded on some legal theory. It's founded on engineering system science. So we have something very real to always fall back on, and it keeps us very, very honest. So it's good to have you. All right. Let's wrap up with any questions we have. Any questions on this whole discourse? We'll take, again, ask your question if you can keep it 30 seconds to a minute, but let's go. Any questions? All right. I guess we have no, okay. Go ahead, Barbara. Question? You have less than a minute. Go ahead.
Yes, when I was collecting signatures this past season at the post office, the postmaster general came out and told me to leave, that it was private property. I couldn't be there soliciting. I explained to her I wasn't soliciting, you know, and what I was doing. Okay, I left because I didn't feel like having trouble. But I came back the next day. I had the documents printed off, you know, from the Supreme Court rulings. She would not even look at them. And I put her on the spot and I said, well, tell me, is this public or private property? And she just looked at me like, you know, like a deer in the road. And I asked her again, is it public or private? And she goes to her subordinate and says, Gary, tell her, explain it to her. And I look at Gary and I say, Gary, private or public? And Gary's got this look on his face like, oh, God, don't involve me.
Barbara, do you have a question, Barbara?
Yes. Was she right to do that?
Was she right to do what?
Run me away telling me it was private property. Because I read that it was the largest and oldest.
Okay, so if you're in front of a post office collecting signatures and you're on the sidewalk, that's public property, okay?
No, I wasn't.
Go ahead. Marianne, did you have something to say?
I had the same thing. I used to get a lot of signatures at the post office, and they kicked me off saying it was private property. I heard the same thing, and I said, what are you talking about? This is, you know, public.
Yeah, so the Postal Service is an interesting organization. I'll do a whole video on this. They're actually a quasi public-private organization, okay? This is why I'm saying the founding of the Postal Service is not, they're not public company, but they're sort of semi-private slash public, okay? It's in this gray area of what they actually are. And it was intended, Marianne and Barbara, to be put into this area because it's an infrastructure play for all of us. And when the Postal Service was created, We've never had really a larger discourse on how we create organizations that are really part of the public infrastructure. So I'll do a longer video on this, okay?
Yeah, sounds good.
It can't be answered in one shot. Thanks. Anyone else?
Looks like we have Rick Kerp.
Go ahead, Rick.
Yeah, hi, Dr. Shiva. I met you this morning on my first open house. I thought I'd get in today because I liked what you were talking about and I wanted to hear some more. And it was, a matter of fact, it was the same thing that I heard you about 5 years ago talk to Ernie Hancock about, and I was really intrigued. Anyway, I just have a simple question. I'm just wondering worldwide, what's the membership of this movement?
What do you mean, what's the membership of this movement?
I mean, how many people are involved? Do you have numbers?
Yeah, we do have numbers. We don't like to publicly talk about it right now because we're broadcasting.
That's fine. That's fine.
Yeah, the interesting thing with Ernie Hancock is, you know, he had me on, and then he was, when I exposed Robert Kennedy, he didn't like that. I don't know if you know this background about him.
I don't. As a matter of fact, I just learned a lot about Robert Kennedy myself.
Yeah. So
I was stuck in that mode. So, yeah.
Right. So Ernie was stuck in that. I don't know if he's ever gotten out of it.
Well, but,
I don't know if he ever got out of it. And the last interview I did with him, he didn't like that. You see?
Yeah.
So the larger question about your question is, so, you know, we have about 500 million people who've seen our videos globally.
Okay.
And the reality is that everyone knows a lot of people know we exist. The bigger question is, why is it the efforts that they go to make us invisible? That's the question, really, Rick.
They made you invisible. Yeah, I've lost track of you for 5 years.
Right, but what I'm saying is the level of effort that goes into concealing us, they spend a lot more energy in telling people not to even discuss us. And therein will tell you the real power of our movement, okay? And the good thing is, Rick and I spoke earlier this evening, and Rick has a lot of experience getting on the ground. And that's what's really valuable, Rick. It's good to have you.
Yeah, thank you.
Yep. Let's go to Mary Burks. Go ahead, Mary.
Okay, am I unmuted?
Yes, what's your question, Mary? Nicholas, can you make sure you're facilitating this so I don't have to jump in?
Okay, so Dr. Shiva, you and I had an interview already on the on soil last year, actually in 2023, and I've been setting up 3 meetings with Monica and Prabhakar, but we were not getting responses from them. So we wanted to do the Zoom meeting for 60 minutes for being able to do a partnership with you guys to tell you about herbal results. So I have been working on that with your team. And I've also sent maybe 10 emails to everybody about it. And I'm not getting
any question, Maria?
My question is, what can we do to be able to perhaps start I think that maybe Bill Gates is doing taking over change.org, but should we start a petition so that we can keep this public.
So Mary, what part of the country are you in right now?
I'm in California.
Oh, you are? Okay. Have you connected with we have a couple of people from California here. Have you connected?
Yeah, I have Jill Jones, and we became an electoral voter for you. And I also passed out, I also passed out 1,100 flyers for your presidential campaign. I have not taken the Warrior Scholar course yet.
So the question is, what, starting something that competes with change.org? Is that the question?
No. It's twofold. One is what's going on with Monica and Prabhakar with getting a meeting, the 60 minute meeting with you. That's been an issue for us because you and I have been in an interview before.
You know, together. I heard that. No,
And the second part is being able to actually, because the post office is a very critical organization for someone like me. So what do we do to start a petition so that we can begin to maintain the public infrastructure of the post office? Because that's why I'm here. I want to be able to figure out what to do with your leaders here, Jill Jones, these guys, to be able to start a petition to figure out how we're going to collect signatures and get back on the streets to collect signatures and get people to know how to join not only this movement but privatization, to stop the privatization of the postal service.
Yeah, so that's why first thing is we want to make people aware of this, which is what we've done and we've been doing for about 10 years on this matter. The second issue, so first it starts with education. The second issue is the only people who can affect the Postal Service are working people and Postal Service workers themselves. But on the issue with, whatever the issue with setting up meeting is, Nicholas or Crystal, if you can follow up with Mary to help her out. Crystal, are you here?
I can follow up with her.
Okay, good. All right, great. Thank you. Next question.
We have nobody else has their hands up.
Okay. All right, Nicholas, if you can just wrap up. We are, myself, just to give you guys an idea, we have about six different court cases that were, some of you may know, we got on the ballot in 13 major states. Six states illegally threw us off. But without having any lawyers, we ourselves are working it through the federal courts. We won a number of rulings in some of the lower courts, and they're all going up eventually up to the Supreme Court. So myself, Nicholas, and Crystal, we have a midnight filing. We have to file in Tennessee, so we have about 2 hours to make a filing. Just to give you an idea, that those of you who get involved in our movement, you will learn actually how to build and file lawsuits. Nicholas, how many lawsuits have you filed before? Recently, none, right? This is your first time, right?
Yeah, this is my first time.
Yeah, Nicholas's background is as an electrician. So we teach people how to do that. So we have, and we're doing this without any support from any major attorneys, and we have victories we get in these lawsuits, federal lawsuits, pro se lawsuits. So when we look at things like the Postal Service and those sayings, you have to have the right strategy. Simply doing petitions really doesn't get you anywhere, frankly, except if it's linked to something of a broader base movement, for example, of actually resulting in an action. So even the lawsuits we do, we don't really do these lawsuits just to do a lawsuit. But without our movement, the lawsuits would have no, they'd be frankly useless. You'd just be collecting money from people, which is what Booby fucking Kennedy does. Give me money, I file a lawsuit, and they go, don't go anywhere. But to the extent we do lawsuits, they're done to educate people. If we win, great. But if we don't win, it's irrelevant because we still get the legal arguments out there and we educate all of you. So right now, the lawsuit that we're taking up, we actually had a major victory in Tennessee because we argued that just because an election is over does not mean the lawsuit can get thrown out of court because they call it mootness. And we actually won on the mootness argument in Tennessee and also in New Jersey. In Utah, we didn't. So a lot of these cases are going to be fascinating cases for the Supreme Court to deal with. Again, all of this is being done by people in our movement who have no legal experience, but are learning legal experience. So if you want to learn how to do stuff and you want to contribute, get involved. Nicholas, can you finish up with the Anthem video and the features video, please?
Yes, we'll do.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you, Dr.
Keep an eye out for local meetings that occur typically on Wednesdays and monthly meetings we do. Nicholas or Matt, you may want to let people know this Friday, tomorrow, we're going to be doing a tutorial at 7 p.m. on our health education curriculum.
Thank you. I left a link in the description.
Yep. And Crystal, if you could connect with Marie to find out where she's sending this email and what this meeting's about. Thanks.
We have allowed our country to be taken over from within, and the end goal is you will have a homogenized world where we will become slaves, because there is a condition among the elites that really thinks they're better than you, deep down inside them, that you don't deserve the freedoms you have. They don't. This reality is what people need to wake up to, and we need to all unite working people. There's only one movement that can do that. And that is the movement that we started creating here in Massachusetts, the Movement for Truth, Freedom, and Health. Look, I've been a student of politics since I was a four-year-old kid, studying revolutionary movements, left wing, right wing. There's a physics, there's a nuclear science to destroying the establishment. To build a bridge, you need to understand Newton's equation. You need to understand the laws of gravity. You need to understand Poisson's ratio. There is a way to build a revolution. And that's why I put this together. My goal is to train an army of truth, freedom, and health leaders. We don't need followers like social media. We need leaders, but they need training because the educational system does not teach them history, nothing. So in 3 hours, that's what I've started doing. That's the solution. Wow. We got to train people first with understanding what a system is, the dynamics of all systems that affect nature. The second is understanding the interconnection between truth, freedom, and health. Freedom is the ability to move freely, communicate freely, talk freely. Without freedom, you cannot convert ideas, hypothesis into truth, which is science. And without freedom, you can't really get to truth. And without truth, you make up fake problems and fake solutions, which means you destroy our health. And without health, which is the infrastructure of us and our body, you can't fight for freedom. Truth, freedom, health. Third concept is it has to be bottoms up. Working people, people who work uniting. And what the right wing has done is whenever you say working people unite, that must be communist. Meanwhile, they've let the Democrats run unions, which suppress workers, completely corrupt. But when you look at the arc of American history, it's been when working people came up. We need to go local. Every solution I'm coming up with is a part of this movement. We're giving the science, which is the truth, and then we tell people what they can do on the ground. Like with election fraud, you don't need to wait for some lawyer. Our goal is to train people to go local, to go local, to go local, fight locally. Forget lawyers, forget politicians, forget celebrities. You've got to learn politics, and there is a science to it. They lock us down, we should be ready to shut them down. And the fourth part of this principle is the not so obvious establishment. So when you look at a system, there's always something that disturbs you from getting to your goal. Well, the biggest disturbance is the not so obvious establishment, which are those people who claim they're for you, on the left and the right, the Al Sharptons who tell black people I'm for you, the Tucker Carlsons. Do you think any true anti-establishment person will ever be on Fox or CNN? I don't think so. They both mislead working people back into the establishment. Without this solid understanding of political physics and theory, you're screwed. You're gonna follow on the left wing, Bernie Sanders, oh, he said something, or Robert Kennedy, scumbags. Or you're going to follow some right-wing talk show host. They're not going to lead us to liberation. It's us. We're building a bottoms-up movement. And that political physics, it's a nuclear science of change. Bottoms up. We have to organize to understand that there is people who talk a good game and then look at what they actually do, left and right. I'm sorry, Sean Hannity may say some good things, but I don't see the urgency in his voice to get something done. And it can only come when you weaponize yourself with the right knowledge. You need to be able to identify a rat. You know, Christ didn't go after the Romans, right? It was the Pharisees and the Sadducees who screwed him up. His own, quote unquote, people. And that's where we're at. So these four concepts I've built into a curriculum where people can go to truthfreedomhelp.com, and it's an educational program. We need to train people in political theory. You need to have physics. And I've created that curriculum. People need to get educated. We need to get educated fast. And within a half an hour, I can teach people. 2 years of MIT control systems, I teach people those concepts. Then I apply it, anyone can understand it. And then you say, oh, I gotta build a bottoms-up movement. They have to get politically astute, and then they have to go locally and act, not sit there on social media. They have to act locally, defy locally, do civil obedience locally, but with knowledge on how to build a movement. Now, the Senate campaign's expanded to the Movement for Truth, Freedom, and Health, and they can find it on truthfreedomhelp.com so people can sign in. They can get access to a bunch of videos. If they want to take a course and become a Truth, Freedom, Health leader, I offer a full scholarship there. But we want people to make a commitment that they'll study, that they'll get certified, that they'll go do activities on the ground. So go to truthfreedomhealth.com. Welcome to VA Shiva. VA Shiva is a product of my journey across East and West, science and tradition, ancient and modern, that brings you the science of systems so you can become a force for truth, freedom, health. VA Shiva is a platform of revolutionary education, community building, and weaponry for unleashing local activism. My journey to VA Shiva begins in the chaos of Bombay, where I experienced diverse religions, languages, castes, and in a small village that had no running water, no electricity, where my grandmother, a poor village farmer, practiced Siddha, an ancient system of Indian medicine over 10,000 years old. She observed one's face, the art of Samudrika Lakshanam, to understand a body's unique constitution, allowing her to deliver the right medicine for the right person at the right time. Watching my grandmother heal others, I was inspired to study medicine, but I was also aware of the corrupt caste system of India, which denigrated a human being, where my family were considered low caste untouchables, where one's birth determined one's destiny. The grit and determination of my mother and father led them to get educated and to come to America, a one in a trillion event. Their actions inspired me to work hard and excel. While in ninth grade, I attended New York University in a computer science program, and subsequently, at the age of 14, was given a full-time job as a research fellow at what is now known as Rutgers Medical School in the heart of Newark, New Jersey. There, I investigated the system of sleep using mathematics, computer science, and biology for sudden infant death syndrome. It was there in Newark where I invented email when I was the first to convert every feature of the physical, paper-based inner office mail system, including inbox, outbox, memo, carbon copy, blind carbon copy, attachments, into its electronic equivalent, a system which I named email, a term that I was the first to coin. On August 30th, 1982, I was awarded the first U.S. copyright for the invention of this system, recognizing me as the inventor of email. At that time, copyright was the only way to protect software inventions. I went on to MIT, where I earned 4 degrees across multiple systems of engineering, electrical, mechanical, design, biological. That training led me to invent many other systems for advancing humankind. Echomail, the world's first intelligent email management system. Cytosolve, a computational biology system for eliminating animal testing to discover new medicines faster, cheaper, and safer. And to the creation of a whole systems methodology for certifying clean food. These innovations led me back on a Fulbright to India, where I discovered the missing link between Eastern medicine and Western systems theory, honoring my grandmother, to develop Your Body, Your System, a powerful tool that will help you understand how your body is a system and how the inputs of food, supplements, and exercise bring your body back to its natural system state. And Systems Health, an integrative educational discipline that is now integrated into the VA Shiva platform that will enable you to learn the science of systems, the science of everything, be it your body as a system or our society and politics as a system, to reveal the foundational interrelationships between truth, freedom, health. Now is the time for you to be the light, learn the science of systems, build community, and weaponize yourself to unleash the activism necessary to deliver truth, freedom, health in your local community. Welcome to VA Shiva.